Episode 13, Blood of My Blood. Dr. Van Helsing has begun the effort to find and destroy Count Dracula. But Van Helsing and the others do not yet comprehend the complete evil intent of the Nosferatu.
Dr. Seward's Diary, 3 October, 1897. Let me put down with exactness all that has happened, as well as I can remember it since last I made an entry. Not a detail that I can recall must be forgotten. In all calmness, I must proceed. When I came to Renfield's room, I found him lying on the floor on his left side in a glittering pool of blood. It was at once apparent that he had received some terrible injuries. As the face was exposed, I could see that it was horribly bruised, as though it had been beaten against the floor. Indeed, it was from the face wounds that the pool of blood originated. I directed the attendant to bring Van Helsing at once. The man ran off, and within a few minutes, the professor appeared. When he saw Renfield on the ground, he looked keenly at him a moment, and then turned to me. I think he recognized my thought in my eyes, for he said very quietly, manifestly for the ears of the attendant.
A sad accident. You will need very careful watching and much attention. I shall stay with you myself, but I shall first dress myself. If you will remain, I shall in a few minutes join you.
With this, Van Helsing made his way from the room. I sent the attendant away, knowing that we would want privacy if and when Renfield regained consciousness. In a short time, Van Helsing returned, bearing with him a surgical case. We went into a strict examination of the patient. The wounds of the face were superficial. The real injury was a depressed fracture of the skull, extending right up through the motor area.
We must reduce the pressure and get back to normal conditions as far as can be. The rapidity of this effusion shows the terrible nature of his injury.
The whole motor area seems affected. The suffusion of the brain is increasing, Doctor. We must operate at once or it may be too late.
Patience, patience. We shall wait just long enough to fix the best spot for drafeening, so that we may most quickly and perfectly remove the blood clot.
The minutes during which we waited passed with fearful slowness. I had a horrible sinking in my heart, and from Van Helsing's face, I gathered that he felt some fear or apprehension as to what was to come. I dreaded the words that Renfield might speak. I was positively afraid to think, but the conviction of what was coming was upon me. At last, there came a time when it was evident that the patient was sinking fast. He might die at any moment. I looked up at the professor and caught his eyes fixed on mine. His face was sternly set.
There is no time to lose. His words may be worth many lives. We shall operate just above the ear.
Listen. The pressure is reduced. He's coming round.
Our time will be short.
Suddenly his eyes opened, and he became fixed in a wild, helpless stare. This continued for a few moments, and then it softened into a glad surprise, and from the lips came a sigh of relief. He moved convulsively, and as he did so, said,
"Why, Dr. Seward, I have had a terrible dream. What's wrong with my face? It feels all swollen, and it smarts dreadfully."
"Gently, Mr. Renfield. You've had an accident. Try not to move."
"Tell us your dream, Mr. Renfield."
"That is Dr. Van Helsing. How good it is of you to be here. Some water, please. My lips are dry. I dreamed..."
"No, no. Rest a moment."
We moistened the parched lips, and the patient quickly revived. It seemed, however, that his poor, injured brain had been working in the interval, for when he was quite conscious, he looked at me piercingly with an agonized confusion which I shall never forget.
"I must not deceive myself. It was no dream, but all a grim reality. Quick, doctor, quick. I am dying. I feel that I have but a few minutes, and then I must go back to death, or worse. I have something that I must say before I die. It was that night, after you left me, when I implored you to let me go away. I couldn't speak then, for I felt my tongue was tied. I was in an agony of despair for a long time after you left me. It seemed hours. Then there came a sudden peace to me. My brain seemed to become cool again, and I realized where I was. I heard the dogs bark behind our house, but not where he was.
As he spoke, Van Helsing's eyes never blinked, but his hand came out and met mine and gripped it hard. He did not, however, betray himself, only nodding slightly and saying,
"Go on."
He came up to the window in the mist, as I had seen him often before, but he was solid, not a ghost. And his eyes were fierce with anger. He was laughing with his red mouth. The sharp white teeth glinted in the moonlight when he turned to look back over the belt of trees to where the dogs were barking. I wouldn't ask him to come in at first, though I knew he wanted to, just as he had wanted all along. Then he began promising me things, not in words, but by doing them.
How do you mean?
By making them happen, just as he used to send in the flies when the sun was shining. Great big fat ones with steel and sapphire on their wings, and big moths in the night with skull and crossbones on their backs.
The death's head moth.
Then he began to whisper.
Rats, rats, rats. Hundreds, thousands, millions of them. And every one a life. And dogs to eat them. And cats too.
Even a blowfly. When the moon got up,
I was pretty angry with him when he slid in through the window, though it was shut. Did not even knock. I got mad with him. He sneered at me, and his white face looked out of the mist with his red eyes gleaming. And he went on as though he owned the whole place, and I was no one. He didn't even smell the same as he went by me. I couldn't hold him. In fact, I thought that Mrs. Harker had come into the room.
The professor started and quivered. His face, however, grew grimmer and sterner still. Renfield went on without noticing.
When Mrs. Harker came in to see me this afternoon, she wasn't the same. It was like tea after the teapot had been watered. I didn't know that she was here till she spoke. And she didn't look the same. I don't care for the pale people. I like them with lots of blood in them. And hers had all seemed to have run out. I didn't think of it at the time, but when she went away, I began to think. And it made me mad to know that he had been taking the life out of her.
My God.
Be still.
So, when he came tonight, I was ready for him. I saw the mist stealing in, and I grabbed it. I held tight. I thought I was going to win, for I didn't mean him to take any more of her life. Then I saw his eyes. They burned into me, and my strength became like water. He slipped through my grasp, and when I tried to cling to him, he raised me up and flung me down. And again, he raised me and threw me to the floor. And then again. Then there was a red cloud before me. And a noise like thunder. And the mist seemed to steal away under the door. I...
We know the worst now. He is here, and we know his purpose. It may not be too late. Go, wake Arthur and Quincy. Let us be armed with the crucifix, sacred host, and holy water. The same as we were the other night, but lose no time. There is not an instant to spare.
I hurried to follow Van Helsing's orders, and soon we all met in the corridor outside the Harker's bedroom.
Alas, alas. That dear Madame Mina should suffer.
Should we disturb her?
We must. If the door be locked, I shall break it in.
But it will frighten her terribly. I say it is unusual to break into a lady's room.
You are always right, but this is life and death. All chambers are alike to the doctor. It is locked. You will put your shoulder down and shove. And you too, my friends. Now.
So bright that through the thick yellow blind, the room was light enough to see. On the bed beside the window lay Jonathan Harker, his face flushed and breathing heavily as though in a stupor. Leaning on the near edge of the bed, facing outwards, was the white clad figure of his wife. By her side stood a tall, thin man, clad in black. His face was turned from us, but we knew it was Count Dracula. With his left hand, he held both Mrs. Harker's hands, keeping them away with her arms at full tension. His right hand gripped her by the back of the neck, forcing her face down on his bosom. Her white nightdress was smeared with blood, and a thin stream trickled down the man's bare breast, which was shown by his torn open dress. The attitude of the two had a terrible resemblance to a child, forcing a kitten's nose into a saucer of milk to compel it to drink. As we burst into the room, face, and the hellish look that I had heard described seemed to leap into it. His eyes flamed red with devilish passion. The great nostrils of the white aquiline nose opened wide and quivering at the edge. Behind the full lips, a blood-dripping mouth clamped together like those of a wild beast. With a wrench, he threw Mina back upon the bed and sprang at us. But the professor was holding towards him the envelope which contained the secret. The Count suddenly stopped and moved back. Further and further back, he cowered as we, lifting our crucifixes, advanced. The moonlight suddenly failed as a great black cloud sailed across the sky, and when the gaslight sprang up under Quincy's match, we saw nothing but a faint black vapor. As we looked, the vapor trailed under the door and out into the house.
Arthur! After him!
Van Helsing, Art, and I moved forward to Mrs. Harker. For a few seconds, she lay in her helpless attitude in disarray. Her face was ghastly, with a pallor which was accentuated by the blood which smeared her lips and cheeks and chin. From her throat trickled a thin stream of blood. Her eyes were mad with terror.
My God! My God!
Van Helsing stepped forward and drew the coverlet gently over her body.
Come to me, my child. Seward, come here. Jonathan is in a stupor such as we know the vampire can produce. We can do nothing with poor Madame Mina for a few moments till she recovers herself. I must wake him.
He dipped the end of a towel in cold water and with it began to flick him on the face, his wife all the while holding her face between her hands and sobbing in a way that was heartbreaking to hear. I raised the blind and looked out of the window. There was much moonshine, and as I looked, I could see Quincy Morris run across the lawn and hide himself in the shadow of a great yew tree. It puzzled me to think why he was doing this. But at the instant, I heard Harker wake to consciousness.
What has happened?
Oh, Jonathan.
In God's name, what does this mean? Dr. Seward, Dr. Van Helsing, what is it? What's wrong? Mina. Dear Mina, what is it? What does that blood mean? Oh, my God, has it come to this? Dr. Van Helsing, do something to save her. It cannot have gone too far. Guard her while I look for him.
No. No, Jonathan. You must not leave me. I have suffered enough tonight without the dread of his harming you. You must stay with me. Stay with these friends who will watch over you.
The professor held up his little golden crucifix and said with wonderful calmness,
"Do not fear, my dear. We are here. And once this is close to you, no foul thing can approach. You are safe for tonight, and we must be calm and take counsel together."
Mina shuddered and was silent, holding down her head on her husband's breast. When she raised it, his white nightrobe was stained with blood where her lips had touched, and where the thin opened wound in her neck sent forth drops. The instant she saw it, she drew back with a low wail and whispered amidst choking sobs,
"I am unclean. Jonathan, I must touch you no more. Should be I who am now your worst enemy, and I who you have most cause to fear."
"Nonsense, Mina. It is a shame to me to hear such words. I would not hear it of you, and I shall not hear it from you. May God judge me and punish me with more bitter suffering than even this hour, if by any act or will of mine anything ever come between us."
He put out his arms and folded her to his breast, and for a while she lay there sobbing. He looked at us over her bowed head, with eyes that blinked damply above his quivering nostrils. His mouth was set as steel. Just then, Quincy and Godalming came into the room.
I could could not see him anywhere in the passage or in any of our rooms. I looked in the study, but though he had been there, he had gone. He had, however, made rare hay of the place. All the manuscript had been burned. The cylinders of your phonograph, too, were thrown in the fire.
There is another copy in the safe.
I ran downstairs then, but could see no sign of him. I looked into Renfield's room, but there was no trace there except...
Go on.
Except that the poor fellow is dead.
God's will be done.
For a space of perhaps a couple of minutes, there was silence, and I could fancy that I could hear the sound of our hearts beating. And then Van Helsing said, very tenderly,
"And now, Madam Mina, poor, dear, dear Madam Mina, tell us exactly what happened. God knows that I do not want that you be pained, but it is need that we know all. For now, more than ever, has all work to be done quick and sharp and in deadly earnest."
Mina shivered, and I could see the tension of her nerves as she clasped her husband closer to her and rested her head upon his breast as she spoke.
"I took the sleeping draught, which you had so kindly given me, but for a long time it did not act. I seemed to become more wakeful, and myriads of horrible fancies began to crowd in upon my mind, all of them connected with death and vampires, with blood and pain and trouble. There was, in the room, a thin white mist. I felt a vague terror come to me and turned to wake Jonathan. I tried, but I could not wake him. This caused me a great fear, and I looked around, terrified. Then indeed, my heart sank within me. Beside the bed, as if he had stepped out of the mist, or rather, as if the mist had turned into this figure, stood a tall, thin man, all in black. I knew him at once from the description of the others. The waxen face, the high aquiline nose, on which the light fell in a thin white line, the parted red lips, with the sharp white teeth showing between them, and the red eyes that I had seemed to see in the sunset on the windows of St. Mary's Church at Whitby. I knew, too, the red scar on his forehead where Jonathan had struck him. Instant, my heart stood still, and I would have screamed out, only that I was paralyzed. In the pause, he spoke in a sort of keen, cutting whisper, pointing as he spoke to Jonathan.
"If you make a sound, I shall crush him before your very eyes."
I was appalled, and was too bewildered to do or say anything. With a mocking smile, he placed one hand upon my shoulder, and holding me tight, bared my throat with the other.
"But first, a little refreshment to reward my exertions. You may as well be quiet. It is not the first time, or the second, that your veins have appeased my thirst."
Strange enough, I did not want to hinder him. How can that be?
It is his
pity me. He placed his reeking lips upon my throat. I felt my strength fading away, and I was in a swoon. How long this horrible thing lasted, I know not. But it seemed that a long time must have passed before he took his foul, awful, sneering mouth away. I saw it drip with the fresh blood.
The remembrance seemed for a while to overpower her, and she drooped and would have sunk down but for her husband's sustaining arm. With a great effort, she recovered herself and went on.
Then he spoke to me, mockingly.
And so you, like the others, would play your brains against mine. You would help these men to hunt me and frustrate me in my designs. They should have kept their energies for use closer to home. And you, their best beloved one, are now to me flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood.
Then he pulled open his shirt, and with his long, sharp nails, opened a vein in his breast. When the blood began to spurt out, he took my hands in one of his, holding them tight, and with the other, seized my neck and pressed my mouth to the wound so that I must either suffocate or swallow some of the... deserve such a fate. May God pity me.
As she was telling her terrible story, the eastern sky began to quicken, and everything became more and more clear. Harker was still and quiet, but over his face, as the awful narrative went on, came a gray look, which deepened and deepened in the morning light. Till when the first streak of the coming dawn came through the window, the flesh stuck darkly out against the whitening hair. Of this I am sure. The sun rises today on no more miserable house in all the great.